At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. Today is Friday, April 5th, 2024, the first Friday of April, the first Friday of Q2, and what an exciting first week it's been. And we're going to talk about that. And we're also going to run down some show topics later and answer your questions. But first, let's get to the thing that has been exciting both me and Justin, everybody at InvestTalk, everybody at KPP Financial over the past couple weeks, and that is the InvestTalk Market Madness. And I am Luke Guerrero to talk to you about all of these things. So let's get to our winners of today. And I bring them to you with a heavy heart because if you've been listening, you know that I have been rooting for Corin Maine, but Corin Maine, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your bracket, fell today to Cytokinetics, the med tech company. And Cytokinetics will be facing off against Equitable Holdings on Monday, and we'll preview that matchup a little later on. Now, to ensure you're in the loop, download the podcast each day for in-depth analysis and daily results. Together, we will discover how you did. We're excited to see who had names left in the finals, which will be on Monday. And with that said, we'll talk about the market performance a little later on and run down the show topics. But after we answer our first caller question now.
Hi, Steve and Justin. Thank you so much for everything you guys do. Your program is extremely informative for folks like us who are small investors. I would really appreciate if you could give me an entry point for a company called Medtronic, MDT. I would like to get an entry point into this company. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
So MDT, Medtronic, is a med tech company. They operate through cardiovascular neuroscience and their medical surgical division. They used to do a lot of diabetes drugs as well, diabetes implants, which I think they shut down some of that more recently because it has been a slightly more difficult time in the med tech space coming out of the pandemic. So taking a look at Medtronic, you see, you know, it's pretty fairly valued, to be honest. It's at a price to book of 2.2 right now, which is well below its five-year average of 2.8. Its price to earnings on a forward-looking basis is a 15.4. And it's not a small company. This is a $100 billion market cap company. But, I mean, overall, taking a look at it, it looks not only fairly valued, but pretty well run. Their debt situation is not bad, $25 billion worth of debt on a $100 billion market cap company. And their interest rate coverage ratio is 9, so they're not overly leveraged. So during a time when interest rates are going to be probably secularly higher than they have been, specifically within healthcare and within medtech, I'd probably be more concerned about companies that are more highly leveraged. This one doesn't appear to be one of them. So let's take a look at how it's performed over the past couple of years. Well, looking at this chart, you see the blue line, which is Medtronic's performance, and the green line, which is the Russell 3000, a broad market ETF, and it struggled relative to them over the past 2 years. Taking a look at it on just the basis of its own performance, if you wanted a price entry, again, I think this is a well-run company. I don't think they're going to suffer like a lot of med tech and biotech companies might. It's been pretty flat. And frankly, given its prospects, given what's happening outside of this company within healthcare, within consumer spending, people moving more and more towards healthier lifestyles, that could certainly be something that takes away from this company going forward. But again, I think it's pretty fairly valued. I think it's probably going to be flat within the 80 to 90 range for some time. And the main reason that is right here. Their sales growth has been pretty non-existent over the past 5 years. And so if you can't continue to grow those sales, you're not going to have that growth in your stock price as well, especially because they run pretty unleveraged and they run pretty lean. Their margins have been pretty consistent as well. So if you're looking for an entry point, I think between 80 and 90 is fine. I'm just a little worried about their growth prospects overall. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 40 minutes or so, and here is a little bit of what we have planned for you, time permitting. Our main focus point today concerns this topic: 5 steps for spring cleaning your investment portfolio. A lot of people think about spring cleaning their homes. Well, you also need to take a look about how you're invested. We'll talk about rebalancing your portfolio, how you can diversify it, and different investment opportunities depending on what type of account you're managing. Also, we'll talk about cybersecurity. There was some breaking news recently that I saw earlier in the week about a contractor who worked with Microsoft who happened to find a vulnerability that could have been disastrous. So what does cybersecurity mean for companies that you're invested in? We'll also talk a little bit about stock splits. People love thinking about lower priced stocks, right? We know the mechanics of a stock split. A stock is worth $100. They do a 2-for-1 stock split. Now it's worth $50 the next day. Some people see that and think, oh, it's cheaper. That's not really how that works. But one company, spoiler alert, Chipotle, is using a stock split for a different purpose. And should we have time towards the end of the show, we'll talk about Tesla, who, according to Reuters, made a big move today, potentially winding down their cheapest vehicle, which they've been working on, the Model 2. We'll also have some caller voice bank questions to play regarding cash investments and GEO Geo Group. And of course, your questions throughout the show at 888-99-CHART. Now we're going into a short break. On the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
Hello. I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk. Please tell your friends and family members that they can download our weekday podcast for free anytime at investtalk.com or iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And when you download and listen, please be sure to rate our podcasts. Our anytime listener line is open, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk about the market performance today. U.S. stocks closing higher Friday, though major indices still finishing down for the week. A lot of that due to the steep drop-off towards the end of trading yesterday. Looks like today momentum and growth names were the standouts. From a factor perspective, value, though, still did better. Big tech was higher with the exception of Tesla, something we may talk about later should we have some time at the end of the show. And treasuries were notably weaker. Curve flattened a little bit. Gold finished up 1.6%. I think gold might be outperforming the S&P 500 this year. Crude oil, big week for crude. Oil ended up 4.5%. The economic front, non-farm payrolls grew by 303,000 in March, well over the 205,000 consensus, probably the catalyst for today's market performance, because within that report, there was also some data about hourly earnings. Up 30 basis points month over month, though it was showing signs of cooling with unemployment ticking down 3.8%. So what did this week mean for the bears, for the bulls? Well, for the bears, there was a big bond yield backup. The 10-year yield touched its highest since November on some pretty firm employment data and manufacturing data as well. And geopolitical tensions ramped up in the Middle East, maybe one of the catalysts for that sell-off that we saw yesterday, along with some pretty hawkish Fed talking points. One of the Fed voters saying that maybe they won't cut it all this year. Now, that's just one member and it's not the chair, so we'll see how that develops as we get closer to FOMC minutes next week and later into the year. There's also some more cracks in consumer resilience. Consumer spending, Ulta Beauty said, warned that they saw a slowdown in the entire beauty category. That could be bad news for consumer spending. Now, for the bulls, it was a good week as well. Firmer U.S. growth backdrop with that unemployment data, with the jobs data, manufacturing moved into the expansion territory for the first time since September of 2022. Pretty remarkable. ISM manufacturing new orders expanded for just the third time in the last 22 months. Labor supply has been expanding. Unemployment's been ticking down. And from the Fed chair, from Powell, what he's been seeing, what he's been saying, pretty status quo, something we've heard for quite some time, maybe 3 rate cuts this year. It was a big, 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 big week this week in terms of surprise news. And next week could be big as well. We got CPI on Wednesday, FOMC minutes will be released, Treasury budget data on Wednesday, and PPI, our preferred measure, a lot of people's preferred measure, on Thursday, as well as bank earnings, which are going to start to trickle in towards the end of next week. How's the market today and this week? Now, let's turn our eyes to a main focus point today, which concerns the topic spring cleaning, 5 ways you can help clean your investment portfolio. And so our friends over at Morningstar, really Christine Benz, the director of personal finance and retirement planning, went through her 5-step guide last week on how to spring clean your portfolio. Because much like your home, if you let your portfolio sit there without rebalancing, without looking at it, it's going to get cluttered and it's not going to be what you thought you left there. So we're going to go through the 5 steps. The first one is streamline. Let's give you an analogy, right? If you have to clean your home and all of your rooms are in different parts of your property and not connected at all, it's probably really hard to keep the whole thing clean. And in a similar way, if you keep your portfolio in 30 different locations, all your investments all over the place, it's going to be hard to keep track of it. So the number one way you can clean your portfolio and make it easier for you to clean your portfolio is to streamline, to make sure that you don't have unnecessary investment providers. You don't have your account at multiple custodians. Now, you may need to have it, right? Your 401k may be somewhere, your IRA may be somewhere else, your brokerage account may be somewhere else, but where you can, streamline your investment accounts and your providers. Number 2 is embracing simplicity. I say often it is very difficult for retail investors to invest in individual stocks. For most people who don't have the time, who are working 9-to-5s, the best thing you can do, and really for a lot of people, the best thing you can do is invest in broad market index funds. Why? They give you diversification. They give you asset class exposure. And if you're picking them correctly, they're low cost, not just in your expense ratio, but also turnover, right? Turnover is an important part of the cost of owning a fund. So for most people, you want to be towards those broad market index funds. So tilt mostly towards those in your spring cleaning. Another one is trimming your holdings. If you own the S&P 500 as a backbone of your portfolio, great. Maybe it's 40%, great. But if the other 60% is in large cap tech, then guess what? You're mostly invested in large cap tech. So now is a good time to take a look at your portfolio and say, what are my investments? Am I really diversified? Because you might not be. You might not be where you are. So taking a look, seeing where you can trim, seeing where you can reallocate and how you can further diversify isn't just something you should do in spring, but something you should do all year round. But doing these things, you have to be mindful of taxes, right? Anytime you trade, you can potentially incur a tax cost in a long-term or short-term gain or a tax benefit and a long-term or short-term loss, right? Not all losses are bad. You can utilize them to offset gains. It's one of the benefits of the tax system. So when you're doing this, maybe you want to sell your long-term gain tech rather than your short-term gain tech. Maybe you want to sell your short-term losses, right? Rather than your long-term losses. Maybe you want to do things in a way that are tax efficient. People are thinking about paying last year's tax bill this time of year, but really you should also be thinking about not incurring too much for next year's tax bill. And lastly, Document your strategy and review it annually. I actually disagree with this. Review it quarterly. Review it all the time. You should be consistently checking your portfolio to make sure you don't have style drift, to make sure that your diversification is there, because it's like your home. The more often you clean it, the less dirty it gets, the more manageable it becomes. Now we're moving into a break. Still to come in the show, I'll tackle some YouTube comments, one about 401ks. So stay with me. Call anytime you want. 888-99-CHART.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I have a question for you. We own Bristol-Myers Squibb, BMY. Just wondering if we should sell it and move on to something that would do a little bit better.
What's your question? 888-99-CHART.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to James in New York, who has a question about Philip Morris. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it, although I know you often speak about companies where, you know, not to chase yield and so forth. And I don't think that Philip Morris is necessarily an example of a company that you mean when you say that. But I would like to own Philip Morris, and I'm just wondering if below the $90 price point is a good place to pick it up and if that dividend is sustainable long term.
Yeah, so I agree with you. This isn't a case of chasing yield. This is a pretty sustainable dividend in terms of how they're leveraged, right? Because Philip Morris, one of the world's largest cigarette tobacco companies, they got $48 billion worth of debt on a $139 billion market cap company, and they're not too leveraged. Their EBIT is enough to cover their interest expenses by 7 times. They push most of their debt out. Their cash flow, it's taken a drop off in the past year, but relative to their 5-year average, it's pretty consistent. The thing that worries me about Philip Morris, and I guess depending on where you stand on the health of cigarettes, worrying might be not be the right choice. But in terms of investing in Philip Morris, their sales growth is kind of stagnant. Over the past 5 years, it's only grown 3%. And I think what the market's done over the past couple years is price in the wake of the pandemic, a move towards a health trend. Look at the UK, for example. The UK announced that they're going to be phasing out cigarette sales to people, starting with people born in the year 2009. So if that trend takes a hold more widely, maybe not in some parts of Europe, but across the world, I just don't see, given where the growth of sales have been, that this is where you want to put your capital for an investment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks for the call. It's always fun when we can answer 2 or maybe even 3 questions in a row. So let's keep going and play another InvestTalk caller question now.
Hey, Justin or Luke, Joe from South Carolina here, just calling him with a question. Want Steve to know that we're all thinking about him and wishing the best for him as well. I currently inherited a retirement plan through the state from my father when he passed, and a lot of it is in cash, and it's in an inherited IRA. And I also have some other just cash in retirement accounts, a Roth IRA and then a standard IRA. And I guess my question is, does it make sense to hang on to that cash right now? I feel that in the next anywhere from 1 to 3 years that we're going to have a recession and possibly a depression. And at that point, does it make sense to hang on to that cash and invest, you know, hopefully in the depths of the recession, but certainly once it happens? I will listen for your answer on the podcast, and thank you so much.
Thanks for the kind words for Steve. He certainly thinks about all of our listeners as well, and hopes and knows that one day he'll get back here. So, you know, I think there are two things to consider here. And the first one is, given that it's an inherited IRA, you might be subject to a 10-year rule. So you definitely need to look into that in terms of when you need to start taking distributions. You may or may not be subject to that. The second part of that is, you know, when people think about investing in the market, they try and time things. And historically speaking, if you look at the empirical data, if you invest on all-time high days, you have a positive expected return. And so the thing you do to shortchange yourself the most is not invest and get exposed to that equity premium. Now, I can understand right now why you may be saying, okay, market's a little overbought, higher elevated valuations, so I'm going to put it in short-term treasuries, or I'm going to put it in money market fund. What you shouldn't do is hold it in cash, because if you're holding it in cash, your money's not working for you. I would get why you might want to hold it in a 0 to 3 month treasury fund, get 5% yield. Hold it in a high savings account, high yield savings account, hold your cash there, get some yield. Should you hold it in cash? Definitely not. Don't hold it in cash. Now, the second point is, when's the right time to invest? Always. If you are a long-term investor, there is no point in standing by and thinking about timing the market and waiting for a depression that may never come. Because in this case, you said you think there's a depression coming down the line. Well, look at the jobs data. The jobs market's robust. All of the top line economic data says the antithesis of what a lot of people believe, which is impending doom. And a lot of that's because people are feeling their own experiences rather than the top line economic data. A lot of that is because, frankly, talking heads get paid a lot more to be bears than they do to be bulls. Nobody listens to the guy that says that the sky is blue and clear. But overall, you sound young. If you're a long-term investor, you know, you may be subject to these rules, like I said, by inheriting the IRA. It's always best. It's generally best to be invested for as long as you can in order to improve the potential for you to have higher returns. Thanks for the call. Now, if I had a drum roll I could play right now, I'd do it. But the moment everybody's been waiting for, and that is the finals of Invest Talk Market Madness. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, I hate to see him go, Corin Maine. I was so proud of you guys for getting all the way to the final four, but the matchup is set. And the matchup is going to be between Cytokinetics, biotech name, and Equitable Holdings. And so if you think about the matchup, again, you know I don't like biotech names. Justin rarely likes biotech names, especially in a rising rate environment. But we're talking about one-day performance here. And so Cytokinetics, let's take a look at how they did yesterday, or rather how they did today. They were up 5.1%. And they've been on a tear since, frankly, the beginning of 2020. And the valuation range, get this, over the past 5 years, between 7.6 price to book and 245. It's all over the place. Looking at Equitable Holdings, life insurance, health insurance, investment manager, their valuation's more reasonable. Price to earnings forward-looking 6. Average over the past 5 years, 5. They were up 53 basis points today. So what do I think is going to happen? What's my prediction? What would Justin think? I think Justin would probably side with me here. I think if I had to pick one, I'd go with Equitable Holdings on Monday because, frankly, I think there could be some more news related to a more hawkish Fed that could drag down names like biotech names. So if I had to pick on a one day for Monday, I think I'm going to go with Equitable Holdings. Let's switch over to our next talking point today, which is about something everybody should be concerned about, and that is cybersecurity. So the news came out last week that a contractor, a German software developer who was working with Microsoft out of San Francisco, stumbled upon, frankly, an alarming discovery last month that could have had massive consequences to cybersecurity. So what happened? Well, he was doing some performance tests and he noticed some unusual behavior in the open source software program XZ Utilities. So he did some tests. Remember, there's just one person working with open source software. And when he looked into it, what did he find? The program had been deliberately sabotaged by one of its developers, potentially opening a backdoor to millions of servers worldwide. Luckily, in this case, disaster averted, but it does bring up a broader point, really several broader points. The first of which is open source projects, which are typically characterized by their free access and communal maintenance, and really the backbone of the internet economy, are at risk because they rely on small numbers of volunteers who juggle demanding workloads without a lot of financial compensation. And so the near miss with XZ Utilities, a suite of file compression tools used in Linux distributions, kind of underscores the vulnerabilities inherent to not only the system of open source generally, but how we monitor it. And so in order to move forward here, in order to prevent projects like this being susceptible to exploitation by malicious actors who are masquerading as helpful contributors. Remember, this wasn't a state actor. This was a developer of one of these programs operating on this utility. It's imperative for government and for private enterprise to work together. And to that end, CISA, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, as well as other government entities, are advocating for tech companies to invest more heavily in resources and money into these open source communities that even they depend on, because the current incentives, the financial incentives, just aren't there because we got lucky. You know, the episode is a stark reminder of the challenges facing these open source software security. And so even the developer recognized we got lucky. He said, you can't run on luck. Luck is not a sustainable strategy. So at the end of the day, you know, this software and a lot of software like it is the foundation for how we live our digital lives. And the number one lesson I took from the past 5 years going into and out of the pandemic is just how fragile our physical lives are, physical society is. And it seems to be the case that that fragility extends to the digital ecosystem as well. So how does this affect you? Well, other than providing the backbone for the internet as a whole, it should make you think, how are the companies that I'm investing in worrying about, frankly, one of the top risks associated with every company, cybersecurity and data risk, and something that apparently even some of the world's largest companies haven't been taking as seriously as they should. Now let's keep things moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk voice bank to a question that came in earlier from a listener in Iowa.
Good morning. This is Nick from Iowa calling in to ask you about Geo Group Inc., GEO. Wanted to know what you guys thought of this company, where you think a good buy point would be. I know it's kind of crawled up here a little bit these last week or so. I've been kind of on my watch this for the past 6 months or so and watch it come down. But just wanted to know where you guys think a good buy point would be and what you thought of the company. Thanks for all you do and be listening on the podcast.
So the question is about Geo Group. And Geo is a private prison company. And the thing that strikes me right now off the top of my head once looking at this is I'm alarmed by the short interest, 20% short interest on a company that only has an interest rate coverage ratio of 1.8, very highly leveraged. And it's tracking towards the top end of the five-year range. Sales growth isn't great. It's been issuing shares over the past 5 years. And it looks like over the past 2 to 3 months, it's elevated from $11.25 to almost $15, which is well above its price target. If you look at analyst consensus price, which isn't always gospel, right? But still something to consider. And that's for a company that sales growth over the past 5 years has been 70 basis points. That's their average growth rate over the past 5 years. Their net income has fallen almost 10%. And so this particular company is in a field where some people have moral objections to, and whether or not you stand on the private prisons are wrong, private prisons are fine side of the fence, you do have to come to terms with the reality that there is intense regulatory scrutiny on these prisons on both a federal and state level. So again, I think I try and stress this when a lot of people call, and it's not about finding out if any single company is the perfect company. There are no perfect companies. You should be investing in good businesses. Is this a good business? I mean, it's pretty highly levered. The debt, $1.8 billion on a $1.7 billion market cap. Its sales growth, kind of stagnant, non-existent. And it's in a highly regulated, highly scrutinized industry. You have scarce capital to invest. I don't think this is a place where you should be putting your money. Thanks for the call. FYI, each night we post the newest podcast on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. So tell your friends. Don't forget to subscribe and turn your notifications on, because we like to go in there and find caller questions. And so let's fit in a YouTube comment question right now. And that is regarding our thoughts on QLYS for a long-term hold. So QLYS is a packaged software company, and it's a cloud security company as well. So as always, when we're looking at these companies, we like to take a look at their relative valuation. So if you take a look at the relative valuation, price to book of 16, that's incredibly high. That means it's trading at 16 times the value of its assets. Its price to earnings, 30. Forward-looking price to earnings of 30. And it's had a pretty strong past couple years, as you'd expect, given that it operates within cloud security. Sales growth up 14%. Its net income up 21% over the past 5 years on an annualized basis. And its debt load, pretty modest. Its debt load looks pretty modest. For me, the thing that is striking me here is just the valuation. I think a lot of these companies have run up over the past couple of years. I think a lot of them are ripe for pullbacks. And yeah, I mean, analyst consensus at 166 is where their estimates are. And just given the run-up over the past couple of years, given where it is in terms of its forward-looking price to earnings, given it has had some pretty fantastic growth, 15% is nothing to shake a stick at over the past 5 years. But sustaining that and justifying that 30 times forward-looking price to earnings is incredibly difficult. So for me, I think now is probably not the time to throw some money into this name. I think you probably would have to come and see it come down to closer to maybe 20 times forward-looking price to earnings. I mean, it's fallen a little bit, but maybe when it gets closer to the 140 range, 120 range, that's when I would start thinking about investing in this name. Just because, like I said, and I have said before, it's not just about having good businesses. It's about when you buy into those good businesses and when you can sell out of those good businesses. Thanks for the comment. We look forward to answering more. Now, on Fridays, we generally like to do a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with a few of those right now. The two-year treasury yield was at 4.721%. For perspective, 3 weeks back, it was 4.732. 7 weeks ago, it was 4.66. 21 weeks back, it was 5.05. And 119 weeks back, more than 2 years ago, it was 64 basis points. Different world. 10-year treasury yield is at 4.373. 3 weeks back, that was 4.308. 21 weeks back, it was 4.63%. And 116 weeks ago, it was 1.762. Gold was priced at 2.325 per ounce today. 3 weeks ago, that was 21.56. 21 weeks back, it was 19.35. And 110 weeks ago, it was 18.06. Silver today was priced at 27.57. 3 weeks back, it was 25.18. 8 weeks ago, it was 22.80. 87 weeks ago, it was 18.64. And 105 weeks ago, it was 23.94. Oil was selling at $87.25 per barrel today. 3 weeks ago, $81.04. 8 weeks ago, $78.04. 25 weeks ago, it was all the way up at 87.44. And 117 weeks ago, $66.62. National average for a gallon of regular gasoline, $3.58. Where is it in California where I live? $5.27. That is significantly higher. In Wyoming today, that price, $3.30. Someone's really got to ship me some gas from Wyoming if they can. Now we got one last break, but that doesn't mean you can't call us. We look forward to hearing from you anytime. Hopefully now, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Love your guys' show. Thank you for answering all our questions. I have a question today about Chesapeake Energy Corporation, ticker CHK. I don't know. It just seems like a good stock. I'm trying to find out what is wrong with it, and you guys are really good at that. So if you can give me some more insight on Chesapeake, that would be great. I'm looking. I already bought 2 shares, but I really want to get into it and maybe get up to about 20 shares. So listen for your answer. Thank you.
Well, Chesapeake Energy is an oil and gassing. And so if you take a look at their sales, it looks like their 5-year annualized growth rate is negative 10%. Why is that? Frankly, it's just because of last year. So companies that sell goods are subject to the price trends of those goods, right? We mentioned it 116 or weeks so ago. Gas was 66, or oil was 66 cents a barrel, something like that. So if you're selling something and the price of something is volatile, your profits are probably going to be volatile. The benefits of investing in a company rather than the commodities, they can smooth that volatility out. So why is Chesapeake's growth rate like that in terms of sales? Because of the price of the commodities. Now, we've seen a turn in the past month or so in the price of oil, and tensions in the Middle East may even just exacerbate that. So I don't necessarily understand what the caller means by what's wrong with Chesapeake Energy. I don't see much wrong with Chesapeake Energy. Its debt levels, modest, $2 billion on $11 billion market cap. Short interest is a little bit high, 14%. And that's probably due to really that lack of growth within sales that maybe isn't keeping up to pace with some of their competitors. Or it could just be that it's pretty expensive relative to other companies within this sector, right? You're going to buy it at a forward-looking PE of 20. That's pretty expensive. Let's take a look at how it is relative to other names within this space. It's price to book, in line. Its margins, less than stellar. Its EBIT margin, also less than stellar. Its net margins, pretty good. It's not too highly levered. I don't have problems with Chesapeake. I think probably you can find names that are going to have lower valuations. I know valuations in energy are going to be a little bit elevated just given the run-up over the past couple weeks to a month. But overall, I don't have any problem with Chesapeake. Thanks for the call. Now, before we wrap up for the day, I'm going to talk about a little bit of a fun story that is a change of pace for why these events happen, but also a reminder to everybody what the events mean, and that is stock splits. Psychologically, people look at a stock split and they're excited about it. This thing was trading at $100 yesterday, and now they did a 2-for-1 split. It's 50. 50 is more expensive. I should buy it. Nothing has changed with the company. Market cap will be the same. Psychologically, from a behavioral perspective, for some reason, these stocks tend to have short-term positive performance because, again, a lot of people don't understand that a stock split is just something on paper. But Chipotle has decided to innovate in stock splits. And so last June, they announced a 50-for-1 stock split. Again, nothing is changing about the company, but why did they do this? Well, the price of Chipotle was and is today roughly around $3,000. And what Chipotle wants to do is reward their most loyal employees with shares in the company. Not stock options, which can be volatile and tough for accounting purposes, but one-time equity. And so when you're looking at giving somebody shares, giving an employee shares, it can be a little bit complicated and convoluted when your stock price is at 3,000, right? You have to deal with fractional shares. And from an employee perspective, it feels better You got 10 shares of Chipotle. I got 50 shares of Chipotle instead of one share of Chipotle. But the key here is it good for employees? Yeah, you get a stake in the company. But it's just a reminder to everybody, looking beyond the optics, nothing has changed. Stock splits don't mean much. And I'm Luke Guerrero, and that completes another episode of Invest Talk. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, and remember to tell your friends to follow the daily results updates. Our last one's coming on Monday, and somebody's going to win $1,000. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night. Enjoy.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.